What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, the more pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock, and today we're going to talk about the New York Mets. Hit me a home run, baby. Okay, I went on the Straight Out of Flushing podcast with New York Post and Dexter Henry on Sunday night. It's why I'm doing the Mets a little bit early, because I had to prepare for that one. And I did even more of a deep dive today on twitch.tv/PitcherList. If you don't know, every single weekday morning, I'm doing all of these teams and going through every rotation and their prospects team by team to make sure I don't miss anyone from my top 400. And so with the New York Mets, well, you have Nolan McClain at the very top, and I'm conflicted because on one side, I love his sinker, 96 miles per hour. He is amazing at getting it down and inside to right-handers. It has true 1-inch vert, so it's a true sinker. That's great. And then everything else is a little bit strange. You have a sweeper that didn't get whiffs last year. It got a lot of called strikes, but is that going to flip? Is it going to be a 20% swing strike rate against right-handers next year? I hope so. And then against lefties, you don't really have a clear-cut plan. The four-seamer isn't doing enough. The sinker is not a good option for him. The curveball is trying to be the pitch for him against left-handers. There is a cutter that doesn't quite have amazing movement to it. It is the biggest concern that I have. And you also just have an entire package that is questionable at earning strikes. So Nolan McClain had this elevated walk rate last year above 8%. And if you remove those strikeouts of 30% plus last year, which he is not going to get, then you should have more walks because those are fewer at-bats ending so soon, right? Or ending on strike three, and then all of a sudden turns into another ball, and so on and so forth. So I am less excited about Nolan McClain, and it really comes down to, is Nolan McClain going to be able to improve again? Is he going to be able to throw more strikes and just have generally better command? Is he going to figure out a better approach for left-handers? I am not totally convinced. Now, my ideal world would have Nolan McClain throwing sinkers down and away to left-handers and then have a changeup that he really likes and is able to spot properly underneath it. I don't know if he can do that, but that would be my ideal game plan. And then you have the curveball there too. Maybe a surprise four-seamer or a surprise cutter. I don't really think the four-seamer is good enough. I feel that Nolan McClain should be good for your fantasy teams. I don't want to go after him in my drafts because I feel as if I need to draft him as a top 25 starter, which is banking on him being better than he was last year. Ignore the 48 inning sample of the 206 ERA, 104 whip, and a 30% K rate. That is not the Nolan McClain you're going to see throughout the year. And you actually did see him allow a ton of home runs in his final game against the Cubs. That is a product of Nolan McClain, yeah, having wonky command. So I'm not quite there. The best command he has is a sinker inside to right-handers, and I love that. That's my favorite thing about him. It's just everything else. I'm not quite sure, and I have him around like 35, 40, around that range, because I just rather would take Framber Valdez or Logan Webb, who I think are doing very similar things to Nolan McClain, but just better, and they've done it for longer. And That's kind of where I see it. Kodai Senga is probably the most important piece to this Mets rotation. This is assuming that they don't go and get someone like Freddy Peralta or Framber Valdez. And if they do, I apologize that you're listening to this podcast after the Mets have made any sort of moves with their rotation. But you have Kodai Senga, who had this amazing rookie season and has since dealt with injuries a bit. I mean, top of 2025, the first half was far better than the second half. But even then, he wasn't utilizing the four-seamer cutter mix as he had in the past. He was trying to introduce, I think, too many other things. Also, we saw a drop in velocity down to 94 and change as opposed to the 95-96 of 2023. And then when he returned from the hamstring injury, it still wasn't quite the same Senga, right? He wasn't in rhythm as well. The whole thing didn't quite look like he was fully healthy. So I am going to assume that Kodai Senga is more like the first half version. And I think the best outcome is that he really gets back into the cutter. That really was the mask for his four-seamer in 2023. And it was again in 2025. He just didn't throw it as much. And if the velocity is not returning, Senga's going to have to figure out other things to incorporate instead of four seamers. And he did try to do that with a sweeper and a slider, even a sinker and a curveball in there. And I hope that he keeps experimenting and really finds something that he can trust, because at the moment it's really just peripheral and not something that we should be trusting. While the splitter, yeah, it should probably be better than a 51% strike rate. At the moment, he's really saving it for two strike counts. He did actually have to throw more strikes last year, and it did hurt him when he had to do that. I don't really want Senga to feel like this splitter is anything but out of the zone. And he doesn't have to rely on this when behind necessarily. Just always making sure that batters are aware of it. And the more that he does that, the better the four-seamer can sneak by, the better the cutter will perform, etc. I think that Kodai Senga is set up to be a very productive Toby, if not a Holly for next year. Obviously, the whip is of question. He has had 11% walk rates in both 2023 and 2025. So he's going to have to figure that out. But once again, it's all about strikes with the cutter. It's all about getting strikes with the other things that aren't the splitter. And making sure that he doesn't have to rely on this, the four-seamer for that. I think that's possible. I think that's within a realistic probability that Kodai Senga can. And I'm really curious where he goes in drafts. I don't want to draft him as my SP4. But if I can get him as my SP6 and he would go opening weekend, yeah, I would love to see where we're at with Kodai Senga and then take it from there. David Peterson is incredibly frustrating. And it's going to be the same thing with him and Clay Holmes and Sean Manaea. These are hipsters. And you don't want to live in Bushwick in Williamsburg these days. You want something stable. You want to live in Carroll Gardens or Park Slope. These are Brooklyn jokes, and I'm sorry for everybody else. But just know that those are neighborhoods where you settle down and you're happy, as opposed to the place you want to go when you're younger, okay? That might be exciting, but really is not there, because it's just, you don't know what you're going to get. It's not really the vibe as you get older. David Peterson, he has 7.2 feet of extension. That is great, like 95th percentile. We love that part. He has a sinker he throws away to right-handers, which is kind of weird. It does have a high ground ball rate, but it does have an elevated BABIP because of that, over 300, and it should continue to, which means that he's going to allow hits with that, which isn't fun for your whip. The four-seamer can be effective upstairs, but he's not the best at locating that. Some games he's amazing at it, other games he's not. Then he has a changeup and a slider. The slider is an incredible two-strike pitch when he executes it. This is a vicious pitch. It's awesome, and he too often throws it over in the middle to play, kind of the Jesus Lizardo problem that he's had for years and was fixed a little bit this year, where the slider just comes in the middle of the plate for David Peterson and it gets crushed when it does. And he was punished a ton on that slider, while the changeup is not as deadly as we want it to be. Really wide range of locations for that pitch, and it's not that condensed heat zone of the down and away corner of the strike zone from right-handers. So he's kind of a swatch. He could be one, but he's not really. Against left-handers is a little bit better, with the sinker locating inside and doing effective things there. And the slider should be this devastating pitch. Again, he can miss that pitch over the plate. So Peterson is someone who can have that brilliant six-inning start. But for the most part, I'd be very careful chasing David Peterson, because he is someone who goes in and out of rhythm very quickly, and it's chaotic. And I don't like drafting hipsters. The best comparison I have is Dean Kramer, where we know that Dean Kramer has good enough stuff to do well on a given night, but like the command just is not always there, and it's just really bad then. So be careful with David Peterson. Sean Manaea has two pitches now. He was 93 plus, like 93, 94 in 2023. 24, we all know about his amazing second half run because he lowered his arm angle fine. And then 2025, he's now at 91 and change. And even though he's doing that lower arm angle, doesn't have the same command that he did in that second half. Also, he did not have a normal offseason. He had a hip injury. And there is something to be said about that, where you come into the season, it's hard to expect that pitcher to be in rhythm and ready to go and picking up where they left off. So there is something to be said about that, and now that it's a healthy offseason, as far as we know right now for Sean Manaea, maybe he can get back to 92, 93, maybe he can find that feel with that lower arm angle, as he did in 24, but it's just been four-seamers and sweepers this past year. That means that the Mets were like, no, we don't want you going six full innings. In fact, Sean Manaea didn't do that once all of last year. By the end of the season, he did piggyback with Clay Holmes. You might remember that. And it worked out a little bit, but I don't love that. And without that change of working, yeah, he's not going to do well third time through the lineup. So Sean Manaea, to me, is not the kind of guy you want to go for. I can see an argument that you want him in the last round just to see how the first game goes. And you can say, oh, wait, hold on a second. He has that rhythm he had before, and things are great. I don't believe that's going to happen, and I feel as if there are better options instead to go for than Sean Manaea. Clay Holmes, the Adobe. Yeah, he is absurdly volatile because he has a sinker that is really good. Like, it's excellent, excellent drop on this pitch. But that's it? And it's not something that I really trust to do well against left-handers, too. It has, if he can really stay down and away with it, but it's a pitch that also becomes unruly. He loses at-bats constantly because it's a 65% strike pitch. And so there are times that he's just churning it, great, awesome. But then when he gets a 2-0 or something like that, it'll just be two more of those sinkers out of the zone. There's a walk, and that's why he has a 9% walk rate. And why does he have an 18% K rate? Well, because the sinker does induce ground balls a fair amount, yes. But it's also because his sweeper has not become the big strikeout pitch that we thought it would be as it was when he was a reliever. It was about a 19 to 20% swing strike rate as a reliever. It was down to like 11% against right-handers as a starter. He did move to that slider that was a little bit better, but I am not seeing the stuff darling of Clay Holmes right now. And remember, it is lower velocity on the sinker, 93-94, as opposed to the 96-plus that we saw as a reliever. It's just not quite what we want. We don't see the changeup, for example, against lefties doing everything that we want it to do because it's not a high enough strike pitch. It does do well out of the zone, and it can be a good put-away rate pitch at times, but it's, again, not glue. He needs a glue pitch outside of the sinker, and Clay Holmes doesn't have that. So I am going to think, yes, you're going to have an elevated BABIP because you're going to be ground ball focused, and then you're also going to have more walks because you don't have that strike pitch. That is a common theme that you'll see this offseason with a lot of pitchers, that it's just not the right combination to have a good whip. So Clay Holmes, for me, is not the kind of guy I want to go for. He only had 8 quality starts last year. He pitched in 32 games, 31 starts, and 8 quality starts is such a bad rate. Oh my gosh. 25% of his starts, or games, I should say, fine, return a quality start. Jameson Taillon was over 65%. Why would you draft Clay Holmes over Jameson Taillon? All right, we got a lot of other guys to talk about because we have these young pitchers. We have Jonah Tong. We have Christian Scott returning, Brandon Sproat. But we also have 4 prospects that I am suddenly higher on than I realized before writing about them today. And we are going to talk about all of those after this break. We'll start with Jonah Tong, because Jonah Tong is not someone I would be interested in fantasy, and I think the Mets should trade him away. Why? Because he needs to add more. It's a four-seamer that on paper should be really good, but he doesn't command it super well. He throws it over the plate generally, but it needs to be at the top of the zone. And he doesn't really do that. He throws it too hittable often. And he doesn't have a supporting cast. But what about the Vulcan change? That's a really cool swing strike rate pitch. Sure, it wasn't last year, but very small sample, fine. That Vulcan change is an inconsistent pitch. And you know this. It's why I don't like splitters as a number 2 pitch. Number 3, put away offering? Sweet. Could I sing it? That's fine with me as the put away pitch. You just need other things in between, right? But as your number 2 and only that, then I get a little bit worried. And you need to have a consistent strike offering. So you might have heard me say this about Jonah Tong last year when he first came up. The same is true because his other pitch is a curveball. Now, he does have a slider that he's trying to experiment with, and it's just not anything yet, so I'm going to ignore that. The curveball doesn't work because it's too good. And what does that mean? It means that it gets too much break. It has 97th percentile drop, which sounds amazing, but when that happens, 2 things occur. One, it's really hard to command. It's really tough to throw it inside the zone consistently, right? Because it just has more movement. So it's just really, really hard to get that where you want all the time. And two, because of that, it does mean that batters don't swing as much. When they see this big movement pitch, they generally are geared up for a fastball. When they see that, they just leave the bat on their shoulders and they'll take the called strike. And considering that you don't pair that with a high zone rate pitch, generally, giant curveballs like that with negative 18 drop are generally not very good as a number two pitch. Now, as a rare called strike pitch, sure. But you see like Lucas Giolito's, you don't see that anymore. That was the pitch when he came up as a prospect. And yeah, we don't see that because he just couldn't throw it consistently enough. So Jonah Tong is missing that slider that he threw 3% last year. He needs that to be a very good cutter slider thing that is the bridge between the four-seamer and the changeup slash curve. Kind of like Glasnow had his slider added. But as of now, not there. So we'll see. We'll see how that develops. And I will be looking at it at AAA because I do not expect him to be making the team out of camp. And then you have Christian Scott, who's coming back from Tommy John. I also expect him to go straight to AAA, of course, as he just hasn't pitched since he got Tommy John in 2024. And Christian Scott is very interesting because he has a four-seamer that is generally flat and comes in at 94+. Hopefully, he's keeping that velocity, if not more. Post-TJ, you could argue that he has that lower velocity because he was hurt at the time, so sometimes we do see that. But if Christian Scott's able to land that four-seamer upstairs consistently, he will do well against lefties and righties with that four-seamer. So then what is the supporting cast? Well, you have a sweeper to right-handers that has been his main pitch and has been a big swing striker pitch for him. So we're excited about that. He should be able to take down right-handers because of the four-seamer and sweeper. There's also a slider and a splitter. So the slider is a little bit tighter and it can be used inside to lefties. I'm not totally sold yet on that pitch. And the splitter, he gets on the side of the ball too much. So it doesn't miss many bats yet. I'm curious to see how this works with Christian Scott and see how he develops. But because it's a four-seamer, I do get a little bit more excited about it as it does solve one of the common problems of your fastball sweeper guys. That is, they don't have a good pitch for lefties, but that four-seamer theoretically could be. And we'll see. I mean, we should get some time to see the velocity's there. Hopefully the command is there. And then how his pitches are working against left-handers. I wasn't sold about Brandon Sproat last year. And I wasn't sold when I talked to Dexter Henry on the New York Post podcast over the weekend. However, I can see how it could work now. And I did more digging on it. And the sinker is incredibly interesting. It's not too plain in like 1 inch of drop, but it is like 6 inches, 6-7, with that 16 to 17 horizontal at that velocity and with really good intent to go inside to right-handers. So that as a package is really nice to see from a sinker. And then you have that pitch doing well against left-handers, which is kind of cool. And the sweeper has always been the thing with Sproat, the typical sinker-sweeper guy, where the sweeper is a big swing strike rate pitch. You love to see that from Sproat. So already we're talking about, like, with Nolan McClain of having the sinker and sweeper as the main 1-2. So then what is it against left-handers? And what I'm very interested in is the curveball. I think this curveball could be a legitimate offering to lefties. I don't love the four-seamer. I think the four-seamer is just not, it's just not good enough. The velocity is the biggest thing. There is some flatness to it, like a 1.2 height adjusted VA that maybe he can go upstairs with that effectively against left-handers. But I think that curveball could actually be a really good offering against lefties. It doesn't have the massive break, like it does with Tongs, but it is two plane. And like 13 inches each, which is really good. 80 miles per hour. He has a good ability to, I think, get it over the plate. And you could see, you could theoretically see that four-seamer really lean in up and then with a changeup down and away to then take it down left-handers. I'm not saying he's going to do that, but I think that there is something here to Sproat over time. I don't think he's going to get the job out of camp. I mean, it would have to be something like Manaea is just not going to be good enough, or there's another opening for whatever reason. I would say of Tong, Sproat, and Scott that Sproat should be the one that would get an opportunity if there is one. They should also get a free agent anyway. But there is more to be done with Brandon Sproat before I would say, yes, go and do this. But I am very curious to see if he does elevate the four-seamer to lefties. I would be very curious to see if he can consistently throw that curveball for strikes against lefties as well. And there are ways that this could work. Now, the four prospects that I want to talk about are also very, very interesting. And before I get to them, just Justin Hagenman is not the kind of guy that you want to go for. It's like a 93 mile per hour sinker that is pedestrian. It's a slider that whatever, a changeup. It's just not anything. He's really a long reliever. Cooper Criswell could show up for like five innings, and he has an amazing drop, like negative three vert on the sinker. So it's just so low. Same with the changeup. It's like 89 miles per hour on the four seamer, or on the sinker, 84 on the changeup and sweepers. Like, he's a right-handed Ryan Yarbrough, and it can just generate outs. It's kind of funny. I love that he's like squeezing this out, and maybe the Mets will use him early on if they need to, right? And have Sproat down. And Tyler McGill got Tommy John in September of 2025. So we're not going to see him till 2027, the earliest, and it's going to be maybe even into that season. All right. So these four prospects, I'm going to start at the top with Jonathan Pintaro, who did get an appearance in the majors, but really is in AAA. He's 28 and he's so interesting. I just don't know if the command is good enough, but like, he throws 96, 97. He did. I dropped down to like 94, 95-ish by the end of the year, probably stamina stuff, but he was 96, 97 with this four-seamer that is incredibly flat. 1.6 height adjusted VAA, 1.7 when we saw him in the majors, and for that like one inning or two or whatever that was. But then you also have a sinker he's been experimenting with that is 16 inches of horizontal and 1 inch of vert that is two plane elite drop, right? So if he can just locate the four-seamer upstairs, that is a legitimate four-seamer all of a sudden. And then you can pair that with this incredible sinker inside to right-handers and even just going down and away to left-handers to split off from the four-seamer. Oh, just those two. That's cool. And then he does have, you know, some sweeper and a cutter, a changeup that he's maybe experimented with it too. It's like, oh, you can see how this definitely works. And it looks really nice coming out of his hands, like a laser. Does not have that little extra dip you see from fastballs all the time. Yeah, I don't know if I can buy that command, especially at age 28. But, you know, when it executes right, it's so beautiful. And I hope it does for Jonathan Pintaro. You have Jack Weininger. These guys next three are all in AA because you have like you have Tong and Sproat and Scott all in AAA. Then you have Pintaro in there too. Like, it's filled up. But Jack Weininger, he's 23, AA. He is a four-seamer splitter guy. So the splitter has been the pitch for him, and the four-seamer hasn't been productive. It's not really like a successful one. And over time, he has added more. So it's sweeper, cutter, curve has been added along the way. I am really curious to see what he will turn into. If the splitter is really the pitch, I'm generally out, because that I feel is the most volatile offering. You guys know this. It's just not the thing I latch onto for prospects. But if Weininger does have a wide skill set of crafty tools of the sweeper and the cutter and the curve, and the splitter is a part of it, then I would be very interested. It just can't be a strike pitch. It can't be a thing that he's really leaning on all the time. And with the low 90s velocity, I'm a little skeptical, but in AAA, let's see how the Mets development squad works on Weininger and hopefully gets that velocity up and fixes the four-seamer and or sinker and find something that is serviceable to help out with these secondaries. Jonathan Santucci is the only lefty here, and he looks great. I mean, he's 6'2", 200 pounds from the left side, of course. And he had a 63 over 18 strikeout to walk ratio in AA, 50 innings last season. That right there kind of tells you, okay, this is working out well. It's a low to mid 90s fastball, so like 92 to like 95, 96, where he can be a swatch-ish. He's more reliant on the slider. It's a big two-plane one. Then the changeup, which he's still kind of figuring out. It doesn't have like aggressive movement as you have with others, but this could very well be a great triangle, right? Of four seamers upstairs that he just kind of, you know, whips in there and guys don't know what to do from the left side, with a slider underneath to both right-handers and then away to left-handers. And then you have the changeup as a proper swatch. So hopefully Santucci really develops. And as a lefty, as opposed to everyone else here as a righty, I feel like he might get extra treatment because they don't have any other prospect lefties to focus on. Then you have Will Watson. He throws a 94 mile per hour plus. Four seamer can push it a little bit more to like 96, 97. With the sinker as well. Each apparently have good movement. Again, this is from AA stuff, so I don't have amazing data. And he has a wide array. So it's like cutters and sliders and changeups. I don't know what we're going to see over time. It kind of feels like from everything I've read that he's more focused on command. So once we get data in AAA, we can get a good understanding that maybe hopefully it's like 95 and he has just all around good stuff as opposed to like the electric thing that is going to, you know, win us over in just one clip. But that is it. That is the New York Mets. And I have more faith in that and those prospects than I did before. I hope that Sproat and Tong and Scott can figure it out, that Pintario can. But I would say if I had to put my money on one of these prospects being like in the rotation consistently, I would actually say it's Jonathan Santucci, just because as a lefty, he's one of the, you know, he's one of the few guys, if not the only one I talk to about it with all these young ones who's a lefty. And it does look like, yeah, this is a skill set of, you know, that just works. So I wouldn't be surprised if that one works, but there was a lot of fun in here. And that is it for today. If you've enjoyed these breakdowns, consider supporting us with PL Plus or PL Pro. You get extra stuff with PL Pro. Obviously, you get all of these benefits. It's like Amazon Prime. There's 20 million things that you get. And just for these articles, what you're getting is the one sheet that I use to get all my data and do my research for all these pitchers with movement charts and also these amazing strike zone plots to see where guys throw to left-handers and right-handers and across the season, first half and second, with those splits as well of lefty-righty. You also get ad-free, of course, reading these articles, which is way better. And you get my early rankings. As I go through every team, I make a little adjustments on the rankings, and you'll see them on the fly. So you will get a better idea of where my rankings will be when they release in February. But that is it for today. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.